Welcome to the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. Hello and welcome to episode 23 of the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. Today I'm going to talk about what constitutes a telephoto lens, briefly touch on some general applications and the difficulties we face when using medium to super telephoto lenses. I'll also introduce some techniques to overcome these difficulties. Thanks to Marissa, one of the long-time contributors in the MBP forum, for suggesting the topic for this week's podcast. Also, congratulations, Marissa, on getting your new Canon EOS 350D Digital Rebel and the 70-300mm IS lens. I know that you've been deliberating what to buy for a long time, and I'm glad that you finally got something, and something that will obviously aid you to get some even better pictures. I'd also like to thank everyone for your patience during the upgrade of the gallery and the forum over the last week or so. If anyone comes to the site after a period and finds that you have problems logging in, please try to clear your cookie cache to get rid of the old cookies and just try again. That should do it, but if you continue to have problems after doing that, please mail me from the contact form on the podcast page at www.martinbaileyphotography.com. So firstly, let's define what actually constitutes a telephoto lens. On a 35mm format SLR camera, a 50mm lens is considered standard. That is, that it does not magnify or demagnify the subject. Strictly speaking, any focal length shorter than 50mm is wide angle, and anything longer than 50mm is telephoto. I'm sure there are varying opinions on this, but in general, from 60mm to 100mm could be termed a short telephoto. A 200mm lens would be considered medium telephoto, and a 300mm lens would be long telephoto. Anything from 400 and above is considered super telephoto. There are, of course, prime lenses at many of these focal lengths, and there are zoom lenses such as the 70-300mm lens that Marissa has just bought that cover wide ranges from short to long telephoto ranges. There are even lenses nowadays such as the Canon's 28-300mm L lens that covers from wide angle to long telephoto. But obviously the price is not to be sniffed at either. Prime lenses will usually provide better quality images, but they lack the flexibility of zoom lenses, and for the majority of applications, the image quality with zoom lenses is more than enough. Whether zoom or prime, telephoto lenses have many applications, including shooting things far away, allowing you to get in closer to them, such as cutting out parts of the landscape that interest you, as I discussed in episode 8 on a composition called Getting in Close in Landscapes. But also, you can see many other examples of this kind of shot in my online gallery. Another and perhaps more common application is for capturing things that might not necessarily be far away, such as birds and things like that, but capturing them large enough in the frame to be able to make out fine detail in the subject, or maybe even sometimes filling the frame with the subject. Yet another application is to shoot things quite close to you, often in my case very close to the minimum focusing distance. This again will be used filling the frame with the subject. When doing this though, I often use an extender, that's what Canon call it, or a teleconverter, to increase the focal length of the lens but leave the minimum focusing distance the same. And what I'm going to do here is, today's episode is going to end up being pretty long anyway, so next week I'm going to touch on teleconverters. So as I mentioned, there are difficulties when using telephoto lenses. The most serious issue that you really need to bear in mind is that the longer the focal length, the more susceptible to camera shake your images will be. This is because you're magnifying the subject more and more as the focal length increases, and so magnifying any movement in the camera and lens when shooting it. Therefore, the degree to which you need to worry about this also becomes greater as the focal length increases. From episode 1 of this podcast, a number of times I've mentioned the rule of thumb to calculate the minimum shutter speed to help avoid camera shake when hand-holding. I haven't mentioned this for some time now, though, so let's go over it again quickly. Basically, you use the focal length you're shooting at as the slowest shutter speed. This is independent of ISO or aperture, but you need to work in the crop factor that your digital SLR has if you're using a digital SLR with a crop factor. Say, for example, you're using a 100mm lens. The slowest shutter speed that you should aim for is 1/100th of a second. If you are using a DSLR with a 1.6 crop factor, the effective focal length is going to be 160mm, so your slowest advisable shutter speed would be 1/160th of a second. If you have a camera with a 1.5 or a 1.3 crop factor, this will make a 100mm lens 150 or 130mm respectively. And again, the slowest advisable shutter speed, of course, would change respectively as well. So another example with a longer telephoto lens, if you're using, say, a 300mm lens on a 1.6 crop factor camera, that's an effective focal length of 480mm. So you'll need a minimum shutter speed here of 1/500th of a second. Remember, this is only a rule, a guideline, and there are things that you can do to lower the risk of camera shake, such as those I explained in episode 2 on stable posture in low light. This will also vary from person to person. Some people can simply physically hold a camera more steadily than others. Another factor that we must bear in mind here is that many lenses nowadays come with IS, that is, image stabilizer for Canon, and VR, or vibration reduction for Nikon. This can reduce your necessary minimum shutter speed by up to 3 stops, and I hear that for the new Nikon VR2 system, it seems to be, I think it's up to 4 stops. So, you know, say you're shooting again at 300mm, this would then need a minimum shutter speed. Originally, we're talking a minimum shutter speed of 1/500th of a second on a crop factor 1.6 DSLR. But if you turn on image stabilizer, that becomes as low as 1/60th of a second if your IS gives you, say, 3 stops. Remember, to calculate the time you gain per stop, simply double the shutter speed for each stop. So when we're working in fractions of a second, that basically means halving the number. The first stop from 500th of a second takes you to 1/250th of a second. The second stop takes you from 250th of a second to 125th of a second. And the third stop takes you from 125th of a second to 60th of a second. If you get to 4 stops, you know, if you're using the Nikon VR2 system, then you're getting 4 stops of additional speed, then you just halve that again, and that will take you down to 1/30th of a second. Of course, this is all based on an example of 1/500th of a second, and this will change, obviously, depending on the focal length and the amount of available light. If you are still shaky on calculating how much time a stop will increase or decrease your shutter speeds or aperture value, or both, take another listen to episode 10 of this podcast, on which I spoke about exposure and manual mode. This podcast is pretty heavy going, but if you know, it should help you to understand how to calculate increases or reductions in shutter speed and or aperture in stops to achieve the same exposure value. There's also an explanation of what exposure value is as well, so I'm not going to go into that today. Now, in theory, you could go down to shutter speeds as low as this with 300mm lens, but in my experience, relying on IS or VR will only prove successful some of the time. For still subjects, the success rate will be higher, but in wildlife or sport photography example, for example, your subject will be moving around, and yeah, it's no use shooting things that are moving around at 1/160th of a second. Yeah, they're likely to move during that time, even if very slightly, and that will cause motion blur in the subject. Of course, another option to avoid camera shake when using telephoto lenses is to use a tripod. I know that many people shy away from using a tripod unless absolutely necessary, but using one will without doubt improve your images. This is not just from a camera shake perspective, but it will also help you to be more methodical in your composition and perhaps improve the composition too because of that. But that's kind of going off topic a little, so I'll just move on. Using a tripod is not going to solve all ills, though. There are times when you can when you can't use a tripod, say if you are in a place and location where there are rules against using one. Also, for many situations, such as, again, wildlife photography, when the subject might be moving around a lot, using a tripod can restrict your movement. Both of yourself physically, not allowing you to move around, and also the movement of the camera, even from a static position. And this can limit your ability to successfully capture your subject on the film. If there is enough available light, I personally like to use up to 400 millimeters handheld for this reason. And of course, as I mentioned earlier, in wildlife photography or any type of photography where the subject can move around, the subject movement itself will cause problems if you go to too slow a shutter speed. If you're shooting birds in flight, for instance, you really want to aim for a minimum shutter speed as calculated by the rule of thumb I mentioned earlier, or maybe one stop slower if you are using IS, but I wouldn't really go much lower than that. Especially when using super telephoto lenses of 400 millimeters and longer. Much slower than that and your success rate is really going to drop dramatically. If there is simply not enough available light to enable you to get a fast enough shutter speed, we do need to start thinking of other options. The first thing you'll want to think of is raising the ISO. Most cameras will start to introduce grain from around 400 ISO, especially in the shadows, that is. So if you don't want to have a really grainy picture, then you don't really want to go much higher than ISO 400. Many cameras these days, 800 is fine, but you will find that, you're going to get much more grain in the shadow areas. Also, popping in a little fill-in flash or using a reflector might be an option if your subject is in range. The range of your flash will depend on the guide number. You can usually check the distance your flash will reach in the instruction manual. There are actually zooms available that fit onto the front of your flash as well that project the light further than normal. I've heard of one, but do not use it yet myself. This is the Better Beamer. Apparently, the Better Beamer will add approximately 2 stops of light output to your flash by concentrating the light emitted, and it's recommended for use with telephoto lenses of a focal length of 300 millimeters or longer. This and loads of other great gadgets can be bought from the naturephotographers.net gift shop. I'll add a link to the show notes in case you're interested. Even having put all of this advice into practice, you'll still be well advised when using telephoto lenses to shoot in bursts rather than just taking single shots. That is, don't just take one shot and then wait for your subject to move or change position or yourself move to another location. Take bursts of 3 shots or more. I don't mean for exposure bracketing either. I'm just talking about taking continuous frames. It's actually uncanny, but what you'll often find is that the subject, a bird or whatever, will move at exactly the point that you make your exposure. So, you know, just take a number of shots in succession, and that will give you a little bit of insurance against camera shake or the subject moving. If you do take a minimum of, say, 3 shots, more if possible, you just give yourself a better chance of getting a winner out of the batch. I often find, especially when shooting birds in flight, at least half of the resulting shots are too soft to be any use. You'll probably also find that shooting single shots will introduce a snappy movement that you can avoid simply by keeping the shutter button pressed for a number of frames, allowing you to concentrate on tracking the subject. Before we move on to another problem that you might not be used to if you're new to longer telephoto lenses, there's a lot of talk happening here. So, you know, we haven't looked at anything for a while. To take a break, let's look at a photo I made last Sunday that is, what was it, February the 5th, 2006. It's shot number 384 on my website. This is a shot of a whooper swan cygnet about to touch down on the Kotokunuma pond. Well, actually, Numa means pond, but the Kotoku pond in Ibaraki Prefecture, a couple of hours north of Tokyo. This shot shows the results of putting much of what I've just said in practice. The sun was now behind some trees, almost below the horizon, so the cygnet was in total shadow. I was using a super telephoto lens, the Canon EF 600mm f4 IS USM L lens, and had the ISO set to 400. The aperture was f8, just about enough to get the entire bird in the depth of field, and the shutter speed was 1/500th of a second. I had IS turned on and was using mode 2, which is the mode that will only stabilize horizontal or vertical movement, allowing me to track with the swan and not have the lens try to stabilize the whole scene. I should just mention here as well that I was using a tripod. It really is just not possible to handhold this behemoth of a lens. Earlier I mentioned that I like to handhold up to 400mm when there's enough light, because it does give you more freedom of movement. To help me get this amount of freedom of movement with the 600mm lens, I use a Wimberly head on my Jitsu tripod. The Wimberly head uses a gimbal type design that allows you to rotate the lens around its center of gravity. And this really is the closest I find that you can get to the freedom of hand-holding with a lens this size, but on a tripod. If you are not shooting wildlife or sports where the subject is moving, you can, of course, use a tripod and go much slower, to much, much slower speeds than the ones I've been talking about today. Note that I am really talking about, I'm really focusing on the difficulties when shooting things that move. So moving on, the second thing that you'll need to bear in mind when using a telephoto lens is that the depth of field gets shallower and shallower as the focal length gets longer. I shot the image that I just introduced of the swan coming into land at f8. I could have possibly gone to f5.6, but at that distance, the distance that I shot this at, which was, I think, around 20 metres or so, that's 65 feet, I'd have ended up with a depth of field of just 40 centimetres or 12 inches. And with a bird that size, that would have meant that the wings, the outsides, the front part of the right wing and the back part of the left wing would have been quite out of focus. Even at the aperture I chose, f8, I only have 57 centimetres or so, that's 18 inches of depth of field. This is just about enough to get the whole bird in acceptable focus, though. Also note that the closer the subject is, the shallower the depth of field gets. And likewise, the further away the subject is, the deeper the depth of field gets. I'll add a link to an online depth of field calculator to the show notes so that you can have a play and see the relationship between the focal length, aperture, distance to subject, and also the size of the film or sensor. And this calculator gives you, it will actually give you a slightly different reading to the ones that I've just given you. I use a calculator that's actually installed on my computer. It's giving slightly different readings, and I don't know which is more accurate. But it's going to be accurate enough for you to get an idea of what I'm talking about. Basically, what I'm getting at here, though, is that when using telephoto lenses, you have to be much more conscious of the widest aperture that you can shoot at and still have enough depth of field to get your subject in focus. Of course, the benefits of this are that it's really easy to get the background out of focus enough to stop it from being a distraction. If the background is not distracting, though, you know, I often like to see a little bit of the environment your subject is in. Especially if it's a wildlife shot. Take a quick look at one more shot, which is number 830 on my website. This is a black kite, also shot last Sunday, at probably three times the distance of the last image, around 60 meters, which is about 200 feet. I actually cropped this a little, about 20% off the left-hand side and 15% or so off the bottom. So that basically means that the bird is a little larger in the frame than the original. This was shot at f5.6 because it's much further away and I could get away with a wider aperture. That's, you know, it's really plenty to get the entire bird in focus at this distance. But you'll also see that the background is quite out of focus. Not so out of focus, though, that you can't make out the environment the bird is in. You know, it's enough for you to be able to make out that there are trees and hills in the background. This again was shot at ISO 400 and the shutter speed was 800th of a second. So I think, you know, I'm looking at the timer on my recording software now. I'm at 22 minutes. What I'm going to do is I'm going to wrap this up for today. And then I'm going to talk a little bit more next week about the extenders or teleconverters that I mentioned at the start of the episode. So before we do close, just to recap, the longer the lens, the shallower the depth of field and the higher the risk of camera shake. Use the rule of thumb I mentioned earlier to determine your slowest advisable shutter speed based on your focal length. And bear in mind not to blindly rely on image stabilizer systems when your subject is moving around. Stabilizing it will not always help if they're going to turn their head or, you know, change direction in the middle of the frame. If you are interested in seeing any of the other images from the Kotoku pond, Kotokunuma, last Sunday, shot with the 600mm f4 lens, I'll drop a link to this also in the show notes. That will just list them all. There's only six, but you can take a look at those if you're interested. Next week, like I say, I'll be following on from this episode. I'll talk about extenders or teleconverters, which allow you to increase the focal length of your lenses relatively cheaply, but at a cost. If you want to know what that is, tune in next week to find out some more. Enjoy your week and keep on shooting. Bye-bye.
This has been a Martin Bailey Photography Podcast.